Have you noticed how the non-specialist press and some script writers display a talent for hyperbole, cliché and plain nonsense when they're talking about boats? Mr. Bloggs was rescued today after being swept off his 30-foot luxury yacht by a freak wave in Storm Force 7 winds inside Plymouth Breakwater. Well, this isn't a direct quote from the Daily Blah, but it's fabricated from three television news reports. Luxury yachts do exist, I suppose, but I'd like to see a dictionary definition of what constitutes luxury in the context of offshore sailing. Genuine freak waves certainly lurk out there in extreme weather. They're so far apart that few sailors ever meet one, but seas larger than average come along in most gales when two common or garden undulations happen to coincide. It doesn't make them freaks. A wave scientist could predict them, I'm sure, and all of us who've been out in a blow are well aware of how our world goes quiet every so often before the really big ones tumble into our cockpits. They are, however, no more freakish than an oak in deep woodland, grown tall in its search for sunlight. As for Force 7 storms and their friends and relations, you can only cry, can't you? I started thinking about all this the other night while watching a television drama documentary about the sinking of the Cunard liner Lusitania by the German U-120 in World War I. I was enjoying the drama side of the confection and was finding the historical aspects of interest until the ship slipped her lines. Then, despite the electronically generated views, the technicalities of her seafaring rapidly became so awful that I lost faith in everything else. Viewers were invited to credit a submarine northwest of Ireland steering something like 331 degrees in order to arrive off the southwest coast. We also saw German crew charging around like balloons with the air escaping because an unarmed ship had suddenly been spotted in decent visibility at remarkably short range. But the best bit came when the old head of Kinsale was sighted from the liner following a period of fog. If that had been the only feature in sight, a merchant navy captain surrounded by dab hands at sextant operation, with a copy of Norrie's Tables in his bookshelf, would have been in Fat City. He didn't need GPS. He'd have wasted no time fixing his position with a bearing and a distance off the light. The bearing would have come from his first-rate corrected compass on the stable platform of the 32,000-tonner's bridge, and the range would have come from vertical sextant angle on the lighthouse lantern. Very accurate he'd have been, too. Not Captain Turner, however. This excellent officer became uncharacteristically aerated and demanded a four-point fix on the lighthouse. At this point, my wife burst out laughing. This was a shame because I was trying my best to live with this guff and find out why the politicians had tried to hang the poor skipper out to dry following the sinking. But it was too late. I'd lost it too. What a pity. Any respectable yachtmaster could have sorted out the rubbish after reading the otherwise excellent script just once. The show took 90 minutes to watch, so I suppose by the time he'd written his report and cross-checked it, the cost might have been a day of his time. Compared with the bankroll expended on recreating the ship's bridge and the insides of the U-boat, it would have been excellent value. Compare this costly spectacular with the good old Onedin line, which many of us used to watch on Friday nights back in the 1970s. We all had a laugh as the hoary retainer, Captain Baines, clung to the wheel of the Charlotte Rhodes while the inevitable tempest raged. You could almost hear the fans generating the wind, and the seawater that lashed him looked suspiciously like buckets full hove in from stage left. But we didn't care. Directors couldn't do more in those days of minuscule budgets before computer graphics, but at least they didn't blunder over the obvious. When Anne O'Needin taught the old boy to navigate by the heavens, she did a pretty sound job, and our hearts rejoiced when the honest captain put the ambitious young owner straight about carrying too much sail in a rising gale. With the ship rounding up and his knuckles white as he ran out of helm at full lock, he finally spoke his mind. "I can't hold her no more, Mr. O'Needin. You'll have to take her reef in." The vessel was a topsail schooner, so I suppose they had the option of letting the mainsheet fly. But the crew were few in number, mutinous, and probably refreshing themselves at the studio bar. Any sailor could see that the two officers would never manage to haul the sail back in again. Good decision, Baines. Well, now I've shifted that burden off me dead man's chest, I'm away to my luxury yacht to catch the tide. I hope I don't make the news by being wiped out by a freak wave in the West Solent.